Imagine spending like $80,000 on a piece of heavy machinery. You know, you review the quote, see the phrase available from stock, and well, you just confidently click buy.
Yeah, and you feel great about it.
Right. You tell your client the new production line will be up and running next month, but then a few days later, you discover that your machine is going to be dead in the water for half a year.
Because that stock is actually sitting in a warehouse, you know, 6,000 miles away, waiting on export paperwork.
Exactly. It's a procurement manager's worst nightmare.
It really is. And unfortunately, in the heavy industrial machinery space, it's an incredibly common one.
So welcome to today's deep dive. We are taking a magnifying glass to a highly specific, high-stakes document today.
Yeah.
It's called the Sourcing Busbar Machines, Delivery and Warranty Verification Guide.
A very niche but very critical guide.
Absolutely. Now, whether you are an industrial engineer, a supply chain manager, or, you know, just someone fascinated by the hidden mechanics of global trade, this is for you. We are going to build your ultimate BS detector for navigating vague sales promises.
Which you really need in this industry, trust me.
Right. But before we get too deep into the supply chain traps, let's establish what kind of machinery we're actually talking about here. For anyone not, you know, walking a factory floor every day, what exactly is a busbar machine?
So think of it as the backbone of massive electrical infrastructure. Hmm. A busbar machine is this heavy-duty, highly precise piece of equipment. It's used to bend, punch, and cut thick copper or aluminum bars.
And those are the busbars, right?
Exactly, the busbars. These are the conductive bars that carry massive amounts of electricity inside switch gears and power panels. Without them, I mean, you just can't build the electrical panels that power commercial buildings or factories or data centers.
Wow. Okay, so we aren't talking about a casual purchase here.
Oh, definitely not.
If you don't have this machinery operating on your floor, your entire electrical production line just halts. You're bleeding overhead costs while your factory floor sits idle.
Yeah, every day it's down, you're losing money.
And that brings us to the core mission of this guide. You know, the difference between keeping a production line humming and completely losing a major client contract often comes down to failing to verify a single innocent-sounding phrase.
Phrases that are, quite frankly, intentionally designed to sound comforting. Available from stock is a perfect example of this.
Right, because a buyer reads that and their brain immediately translates it to, you know, the machine is sitting in a warehouse down the road gathering a little dust, just waiting for my flatbed truck to pick it up.
Yep, that's exactly what they think.
Okay, let's unpack this, because that assumption is exactly how buyers fall into the first major trap, which the guide calls the delivery illusion.
The delivery illusion, yeah. The huge problem.
Because when a supplier says, available from stock, the source material reveals a very different reality. It often means the machine is in stock at the factory, in the country of manufacture.
Right. It is definitely not in your regional warehouse.
It's like buying a ready-to-ship couch online. You click buy, you feel great, only to discover it's ready to ship from a facility across the globe, and you are the one on the hook for the ocean freight bill and the endless wait at the port.
That is a great way to put it. The geography completely changes the timeline. If that factory is overseas, that in-stock machine suddenly triggers a massive logistical chain.
Then that takes time?
Tons of time. You need export documentation, which, you know, can take weeks depending on the jurisdiction. Then you have to secure space on a container ship.
Which isn't always easy.
Not at all. Then you factor in the actual ocean transit time, navigate customs clearance upon arrival, and finally schedule local inspection and inland freight.
And what does that do to the actual timeline for the buyer?
It turns a theoretical immediate delivery into an agonizing 4 to 10 week wait. The buyer thought they were getting a machine in days, and now they're looking at like a quarter of a year.
That is brutal. And the illusion doesn't stop at the word stock, does it? The guide also tears down the classic 6 to 8 week delivery estimate.
Oh, yeah, the classic 6 to 8 weeks.
A sales rep will throw that out, and it sounds perfectly reasonable for a heavy industrial build, right?
It sounds reasonable because it's based on a best case, highly theoretical scenario. That estimate usually reflects the literal time the machine spends on the assembly line.
Oh, okay.
What it ignores is reality. Once your purchase order clears, you have to factor in production scheduling. The manufacturer might be waiting on a specific CNC control unit to arrive from their own sub-supplier.
Right, so they can't even start building it yet.
Exactly. And then you add in those export delays we just talked about.
So what actually happens to that 6 to 8 week promise?
It frequently balloons to 14 to 20 weeks.
20 weeks? I mean, that is half a year. Yeah. If you've promised a client you'll have switchgears rolling off the line in 2 months, a 20-week delay doesn't just hurt your margins, it destroys your reputation.
Completely. Which naturally leads desperate buyers to hit the panic button.
Oh, I bet. You realize it's going to take 20 weeks by sea, so you just start begging for express delivery.
Right, but the express delivery claim is another major pitfall. In consumer goods, express means, you know, a nominal fee for two-day air. In heavy machinery, express usually just means air freight at the buyer's direct expense.
And we are talking about shipping thousands of pounds of steel and hydraulics here.
Heavy, heavy equipment.
The guide gives a hypothetical estimate to really ground this in reality. You might be looking at an additional $4,000 to $10,000 in air freight on a machine that only costs $40,000 to $80,000 to begin with.
Yeah, you are suddenly paying a 20% premium just to get the machine on the timeline you were originally promised.
That's insane. Do suppliers ever cover that?
Very rarely. Most of the time, that express speed is just a massive separate invoice that vaporizes your capital equipment budget.
Wow. So since physical geography and a supplier's specific business model completely dictate these hidden delays, we need to map out who can actually deliver when.
We do.
The guide breaks down the 2026 market estimates across 5 main sourcing channels, organizing lead times based on regional origin and whether a machine is in stock versus built to order.
And this transition from marketing jargon to operational mechanics is so vital. Let's look at the gold standard for urgent needs first, the regional distributor with confirmed stocked machines.
Okay.
The timeline here is a highly efficient 1 to 3 weeks.
The keyword there being confirmed, I assume.
Exactly. You can't just trust a glossy catalog. You have to verify that the physical machine is sitting in their local warehouse.
Makes sense.
Then we step down to the manufacturer with a regional hub. This is kind of a hybrid model. If it's in stock locally, you're looking at 2 to 4 weeks.
But what if it's not?
Well, if they have to build it to order, you immediately jump to 8 to 16 weeks.
That is quite a jump.
It is. And from there, you move into direct overseas manufacturing. Direct Asian manufacturers are estimated at 8 to 14 weeks for a standard configuration. That window includes production, sea freight, and customs.
Okay, what about custom builds?
If you need a custom build from Asia, it extends to 12 to 20 weeks. Interestingly, direct European manufacturers often run even slower.
Really? Slower than Asia?
Yeah, due to their strict production-to-order models and complex customs procedures, you're looking at 10 to 18 weeks for standard machines and up to 26 weeks for custom configurations.
Wait, let me push back on this for a second. If Asian manufacturers generally offer lower base pricing on the equipment itself, isn't that extended 8 to 14 week wait totally worth it for the upfront cost savings?
It's a common question.
I mean, especially if the European alternative might take even longer.
Yeah.
I'd take the delay if it saves my department 10 grand.
What's fascinating here is that the base price of the machine is really only one piece of the economic puzzle. The source material emphasizes a concept called total landed cost.
Total landed cost.
Right. When you source directly from overseas, you aren't just paying the sticker price for the busbar machine. You are paying for sea freight, which fluctuates wildly based on global supply chain pressures.
You're
paying import duties. And most importantly, you are paying the financial cost of extended production downtime.
Ah. So you have to calculate the cost of doing nothing while you wait.
Exactly. If you save $5,000 on the invoice, but your production line is dead for an extra 2 months while the machine floats across the ocean, you haven't really saved money.
You've probably lost a lot more.
You've lost significant revenue. You've potentially paid penalties to your own clients for late delivery. And you've paid overhead for idle workers. Depending on those variables, the total landed cost of the cheaper machine might actually exceed a more expensive, locally sourced option.
That really reframes it.
It does. The defining factor, the single variable that determines whether delivery is measured in weeks or months, is simply whether the machine is in stock locally versus build to order.
That reframes the entire purchasing decision. It's not about the sticker price, it's about the cost of time. And speaking of time wasters, the guide throws a massive red flag on the fifth sourcing channel, right? the trading company, or reseller?
Yes. Treat any timeline from a reseller with extreme skepticism.
Why is that?
Well, their delivery claims are completely unverified because they rarely hold stock themselves.
They act as middlemen, basically. They're relying on the exact same manufacturer lead times as a direct buyer, but they pad the timeline to protect themselves.
Exactly.
Worse, they add an extra 2 to 4 weeks just in communication drag, passing emails back and forth between you and the actual factory across multiple time zones.
It's just inherently slower. A reseller without a physical warehouse address is essentially just a broker holding up a picture of a machine they don't own yet.
Okay, so let's say you navigate the geography perfectly. You avoid the reseller, you verify the local stock, you calculate the landed cost, and you actually get the bus bar machine onto your factory floor on time. You breathe a sigh of relief.
The hard part's over, right?
You'd think. But that is only half the battle. Because it's heavy machinery. Eventually, well, it's going to break. And this introduces us to our second major trap, the illusion of the comprehensive warranty.
Ah, the paper warranty. This gives buyers a false sense of security that is arguably more dangerous than the delivery illusion.
You look at the contract, you see a 24-month comprehensive warranty, and you just think your investment is completely protected.
But the guide points out a harsh operational reality. If that supplier has no regional technician, that warranty is structurally useless.
Structurally useless.
How so? It means you, the buyer, have to diagnose the problem, unbolt the faulty hydraulic valve or circuit board, crate it up, and ship it back to the factory for their engineers to assess.
Are you kidding? What? And how long does that process take?
It takes 6 to 14 weeks. Let that sink in. Your entire electrical panel production line is completely dead for a quarter of a year while someone overseas looks at a valve to decide if it's covered under warranty.
And that's assuming they even approve the claim, right? The source document highlights how vague language is weaponized in these contracts.
It really is. We see phrases like, covers manufacturing defects only.
Okay.
But without a strict definition of what constitutes a manufacturing defect, the supplier has a built-in license to deny claims. In the real world, on a dirty, high-vibration factory floor, machinery failures are almost always a mix of environmental factors, operator usage, and component stress.
So they can just point the finger.
Yeah, if the language is vague, the supplier will simply blame your operator or your factory environment and just walk away.
Here's where it gets really interesting. There is a structural trap hidden in the fine print. Many of these warranties contain a standard clause reading, warranty void if serviced by unauthorized third party.
Right. It's a very common protective measure for manufacturers.
It makes sense on the surface. But if that same manufacturer has no authorized local service provider in your region, they have just created a warranty that is structurally impossible to honor.
Exactly.
You can't fix it yourself or hire a local mechanic without voiding the warranty. But they have no one to send to fix it for you. It's like being given a parachute that is legally only allowed to open after you hit the ground.
That is an excellent analogy. The document isn't designed to get your machine running. It's designed to protect the seller from liability.
Wow.
We also have to look closely at when the clock actually starts. Does your 12 or 24 month coverage start at the date of dispatch from the factory or the date of commissioning on your floor?
Oh, that makes a huge difference.
Yeah.
If the clock starts at dispatch and the machine spends 8 weeks on a boat and sitting in customs, you have just been robbed of 2 months of warranty coverage before you even plug the machine into the wall.
Precisely. So if paper warranties are structurally hollow and packed with legal traps, how does a buyer test a warranty's operational realness before signing the contract?
Well, you have to force the supplier to put the mechanics of the warranty in writing. You demand the coverage list. You don't accept the word comprehensive.
You need specifics.
You want to see the hydraulics, the CNC control unit, the tooling holders, the electrical components, all explicitly listed. And just as importantly, you demand the exclusions list.
Yes, the exclusions.
You need to know how they define operator damage, normal wear and tear, and consumable parts. You want to know exactly what they will point to when they try to say no.
Defining the parts is step one, but the true operational test is service delivery capability. Buyers must secure the name, the location, and the service level agreement, the SLA, of the nearest factory-trained technician.
Why do manufacturers fight so hard against providing a written SLA?
Because an SLA guarantees a specific response time, say 48 hours.
Okay.
To guarantee a 48-hour on-site response, the manufacturer or distributor has to pay a qualified technician to be on call in your region, and they have to dedicate warehouse space to holding expensive spare parts locally.
That's a lot of overhead.
It ties up a massive amount of capital. It's much cheaper for them to just promise great regional support verbally without legally committing to a timeline.
This raises an important question, which the guide positions as the ultimate stress test for buyers to ask their suppliers point blank.
Yes, the stress test.
You look a sales rep in the eye and you ask, if the CNC control unit fails in the first 6 months, what happens step by step and exactly how long until the machine is running again?
It completely derails their standard sales pitch.
I bet it does.
If they answer with vague, comforting assurances like, you know, oh, we've got a great team, we'll take care of you, we have regional support, you need to walk away.
What should you be listening for instead?
What you are listening for are specifics. You want to hear, our technician, Sarah, operates out of our Chicago office. She will be on site within 48 hours, and we hold replacement CNC control units in that same Chicago warehouse. That is a warranty you can rely on.
You also need to watch for red flags during this phase.
Yeah.
If a supplier says the full warranty document is only provided after the purchase is finalized, run. If they measure their typical response time in weeks instead of hours, run. Or if they use undefined terms like subject to fair use.
Oh, yeah. Fair use is a lawyer's playground. If it isn't strictly defined, it will be used against you.
Armed with that stress test question, let's look at how the major busbar machine suppliers stack up against this operational reality. The guide evaluates six major players, and it reveals a highly fragmented landscape.
Very fragmented. It's also with Pettinghouse, a manufacturer based in the USA.
Okay.
According to the guide, they operate with a strong domestic inventory and a robust service infrastructure. For U.S. buyers, delivery and warranty response are generally very reliable.
But the critical caveat is international reach, right?
Yes.
The guide specifically warns that international buyers looking at a Pettinghouse machine need to verify those regional capabilities. What works flawlessly in Ohio might be a logistical nightmare for a factory in Munich if the local support network isn't established.
Exactly. Then you have a block of major international brands. You've got Ert out of Germany, MBI from Italy, Geica from Spain, and Soso from Taiwan.
And how do they operate?
Well, these manufacturers rely heavily on regional agents or distributors to sell their machines globally. If we connect this to the bigger picture, it completely shifts how a procurement manager should evaluate supply chain risk. If you are buying an ERT or a Geica, your delivery time and your warranty service quality are not dependent on the factory's impressive infrastructure in Germany or Spain.
They aren't?
No, they are entirely dependent on your local distributor stock position and technician capability.
That is a wild realization. You think you are buying European engineering and reliability,
right,
but you're actually betting on whether the local distributor 50 miles away decided to keep spare hydraulic pumps on their balance sheet this quarter.
Exactly. Local distributors are independent businesses. Holding spare parts ties up their cash flow. If they decide to optimize their balance sheet by running a lean inventory, you are the one who suffers the downtime when a part breaks.
That's terrifying.
You aren't evaluating the manufacturer, you are evaluating the financial health and warehouse capacity of the distributor.
And finally, there's Payapress, an international manufacturer. The guide's advice here is consistent across the board. Buyers must verify regional stock and technician locations directly with them or their representatives. Do not assume anything is local until it's documented.
So we have mapped the jargon traps, the geographic realities, the hollow paper warranties, and the fragmented supplier landscape.
You've covered a lot.
The final step is synthesizing this intelligence into an actionable battle plan for the buyer.
Yes, the source document provides an ultimate pre-purchase verification checklist. Let's look at how a buyer should actually structure their negotiation, starting with the physical logistics.
Okay, where do they start?
Before you talk price, you demand the regional warehouse address, not the corporate headquarters, not the factory. If they claim a machine is in stock, you force them to verify exactly what zip code it is sitting in.
Smart. Then you move to the legalities of transit. You have to nail down the exact delivery terms. In the logistics world, we use Incoterms like EXW, FOB, CIF, or DAT.
Right. For the uninitiated, how do those terms actually impact the buyer?
They define exactly who holds the financial risk during transit. Let's say you buy a machine, Ex-Works, or EXW. That means you, the buyer, take all the risk the second the machine is lifted off the factory floor.
So if something happens during shipping?
If a crane drops your $80,000 machine at the port in Shanghai, you take the loss.
Ouch.
Conversely, delivered at place, GAP, means the seller holds the risk until the truck backs up to your factory door. You need to know exactly who is paying if disaster strikes in transit.
You also have to confirm import duties and customs responsibilities. You don't want your massive industrial machine held hostage at the border, incurring daily storage fees simply because nobody clarified who was supposed to file the paperwork.
Exactly. And once the logistics are locked, you attack the contract itself. You put a firm delivery date in the purchase agreement.
Firm date in writing.
Yes. You do not rely on an estimated date in an email thread. And you put teeth on it. You negotiate late delivery penalties. If your production schedule is disrupted because they missed their deadline, they need to absorb some of that financial pain.
How do suppliers usually react to late penalties?
Oh, they will fight them aggressively. But simply introducing the clause forces them to be honest about their real timeline. If they refuse to sign a contract with a late penalty, you instantly know their 6 to 8 week estimate was a fiction.
That is a brilliant tactic. Just force their hand.
Yep.
Next up, you demand the full warranty document before signing anything. You verify the start date, the coverage scope, and you secure that written SLA with the exact name and location of the nearest technician, demanding a maximum 48-hour on-site response time.
You also need to watch for hidden costs here. You must ask if a paid service contract is required for warranty validity.
Oh, they sneak that in.
Oh, yeah. Some manufacturers will offer a comprehensive warranty, but bury a clause stating it is only valid if you purchase a $5,000 annual preventative maintenance package. If that's the case, you need to bake that into your first year budget.
Finally, the reality check.
Yeah.
You asked the supplier for two reference customers who actually took delivery of a machine within the last 12 months.
Right. Real customers.
You do not trust the sales rep's verbal commitments. You call those customers and you ask them two specific questions. Did the machine arrive on the exact date promised? And what actually happened when you had to make a warranty claim?
When you look at this entire verification process, it might feel like a lot of aggressive friction to introduce into a deal. It requires pushing back on almost everything the sales rep says.
So what does this all mean? The core takeaway from this deep dive is that taking a single week to run this rigorous verification process prevents months of catastrophic downtime later.
It is the ultimate exercise in due diligence.
The difference between a 2-week delivery and a 20-week delivery is the difference between keeping your production line humming and permanently losing a major client.
Absolutely.
The difference between an operationally real warranty and a hollow paper warranty is the difference between a 48-hour machine restart and a 12-week wait for factory replacement parts to clear customs. It all hinges on refusing to accept vague jargon and getting specific, granular details into a legally binding contract.
It really makes you step back and look at the entire global supply chain through a different lens. If heavy machinery networks and warranty support systems are this heavily reliant on the financial health, localized inventory, and logistical competence of independent, fragile distributor networks, well, it raises a rather chilling thought.
What's that?
How much of our vaunted global manufacturing efficiency is actually structurally sound, and how much of it is secretly being propped up by the sheer unacknowledged luck of machines just not breaking down as often as they could?
Wow. Now that is a thought to keep you up at night. The next time you look at a perfectly synchronized assembly line, you have to wonder if it's precision engineering keeping it going, or just a very lucky streak in a very murky supply chain.
It makes you wonder.
It really does. Well, we want to thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Take that battle plan, ask the hard questions, and refuse to accept the illusion. We will catch you on the next one.